What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 25, Concussion Management for May 30th, 2012. With us today, we have what Memorial Hermann has called the Michael Jordan of concussion management. And so a big time, very important, very knowledgeable guest about concussion management, which is probably one of the hottest topics there is right now in all the sports. And so with us is Dr. Summer Ott. And so we're pretty excited about
that. I just want to see her do a dunk.
She probably will. She probably dunk it in our face with the concussion information. So
That'll be true.
All right. So, of course, we got the live stream going. We have one viewer, and I believe it's my wife because it says Sarah J. Yep. So we have one viewer in the live stream making comments and whatnot. Real quick, before we get started with our warm-up, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson.
Hey, Bill Doc Hale.
Mariah.
Dr. Ott.
Alondra, Eldo,
Anna.
Anna's going to be monitoring the todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast back channel there. So if you want to comment, or again, if you want to try and call on Skype, you can do that, and I can see if we can put you on. Then we have Brian, Fernando, and Michelle taking pictures and doing that kind of thing. So before we get started with Dr. Ott, I want to give a real quick shout-out to Christy Keeler. She was one of the athletic trainers at Doby High School, and she was a guest here on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. They just recently had their first baby. I know she sent out the picture. Did you get it, Bill?
Yeah. Sure did.
So Wyatt, right?
Wyatt.
Yeah, Wyatt Keeler. So congratulations, Christy, and she told me her husband's name, but I forgot.
That's okay. Just say shout out to Wyatt.
Wyatt Keeler. All right, Memorial Day. Real quick, let's see what y'all did over Memorial Day. One, I just want to say, Sarah and I had this discussion. Memorial Day has kind of turned into another commercial holiday. It was funny. I was at Lowe's, and there was a doormat that was like the American flag, and this lady was carrying it around at Lowe's, asking everybody that she saw, just this lady, random lady, would you buy this? Isn't this a disgrace? The American flag on a doormat? I'm like, well, then just don't buy it, lady. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I understand, but I don't know. It's Memorial Day. The whole point of it is to remember the people that have given their life so that we can have freedom to basically do
That's
whatever true. We want here.
Yeah.
So we enjoyed some grilling and some swimming over at my family's. Bill?
Cut down a tree. Cut down some limbs on Friday, and then I grilled Monday.
Yeah, Monday was Memorial Day.
Yep.
So you grilled. All right. Mariah,
but most people stretch
anything?
It out for the whole weekend.
Real quick.
I went swimming.
Oh, there you go. Excellent.
All right.
Dr. Ott?
I went and visited family in Missouri.
Excellent. Family in Missouri. Londra?
I didn't do anything.
All right. That's good for you, right? No Mexico?
Yeah.
All right. Elda?
All I did was play Uno with the neighbor.
Oh, there you go. So you're hanging out with family, friends, that kind of stuff?
Went to the park and we just grilled.
All right, grilling at the park. Very cool. Sounds like fun. Good time with family. Sounds like family all around. Now we're going to get to the Michael Jordan of concussion management. Dr. Summer Ott is a neuropsychologist working with the UT Physicians and Memorial Hermann Ironman Sports Medicine Institute. She has been in the profession for about 7 years. I wanted to mention that she's the proud wife of 11 years and the mother to one daughter. And one thing she's really proud of is she's one of the founding members of the Sports Neuropsychology Society, which is something new, and I'm sure she's going to talk to us about that. She's got lots of other awards from college and, you know, during her schoolwork and stuff like that, but she didn't really want to mention all of them because she said that would take up the whole hour. And so, Dr. Ott, why don't you give us a little bit of background, your hometown, high school, college, kind of how you got to where you are?
Well, I am from Missouri, so visiting this past weekend was nice. I hadn't seen my family in quite some time. I grew up in a small town of about 1,000 people. We only had one flashing red stoplight in the whole town. No McDonald's or anything like that. Anyway, moved out of Missouri to do my training in Pittsburgh whenever I completed my doctoral program as a psychologist and did an internship at the VA hospital there working with veterans in traumatic brain injury and dementia. And then I had the good fortune to work in the field of sports neuropsychology where I did a 2-year fellowship in sports concussion and had the opportunity to work with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Penguins, had a really good time there working with professional athletes, and then I took those skills and that training back to Texas. Or to Texas, rather.
All right, so that's a real short road for a lot of school. So you said there's one stoplight?
There is.
Like literally, or is that just a...
It's actually flashing four-way light, so it's not
it's
even...
not even a stoplight.
Yeah.
All right. So it's kind of like a lit-up stop sign.
So that means one school then, right?
One school that encompassed elementary, high school, junior high, and as an athlete, we played all sports. So I was a multi-sport athlete, and most of my peers were as well.
All right, so since we got Bubba here in the audience, he is the chauffeur today, I believe, right? That's what happens when you're Michael Jordan. You get a chauffeur.
You get a chauffeur. You got a bodyguard.
I haven't quite got my sneakers yet, though.
All right. I'll buy a pair when you get your own brand of sneakers. So, last week, you talked about overuse injuries. Do you feel that since you played every sport in high school, you think that was like that you were overdoing it then? Or
I probably didn't because club sports, whenever I was in school, which was a very short time ago in high school, really did not have a lot of club sports. So we were playing all sports to kind of encompass that time when it would be downtime. But we were usually excelling at one particular sport and played the others to keep up our skills and conditioning. So for me, I had time off throughout that span. But, I wasn't playing like on two or three different teams at one time.
Okay, how did you decide on becoming a doctor?
I came from a family that most people completed high school. Very rarely did many of my family members complete college. My mom went back to school later in her adult life to become a nurse, but many of my family members, like I indicated, did not complete college. It was really important for me, one, to complete college, and number two, to kind of step it up and do something different that wasn't a profession within my family. And so going and becoming a doctor is really important to me, and it was well supported by my family.
How did you decide on neuropsychology?
Very good.
Psychology is a really vast field. A lot of people ask me about what it takes to become a psychologist, and the reason I chose psychology in general is because there's so many areas of study that you can pursue. There's behavioral psychology, there's animal psychology, where you can work with animals and training, there's forensics. CSI really kind of develops sometimes out of criminal psychology. There's also medical psychology, where psychologists work with medical doctors for people who have medical illnesses like diabetes or other lifelong illnesses to work with them in terms of coping. And neuropsychology actually deals mostly with the brain and brain behavior relationships. And within that field is sports neuropsychology. So when I started in sports neuropsychology, there was relatively few of us doing that type of work, and I should add that very few females are actually sports neuropsychologists. So it's a pretty exciting field that's developing, and as part of that Sports Neuropsychology Society, we've now been able to train other members to come into our field of study and work with sport teams and do counseling and psychotherapy with athletes.
Okay, could you just, for some people I guess that might be listening, what neuropsychology really is?
It's usually the study of brain. Pathways, brain behavior. So if you think about your brain, of course, being the most complex thing you have on your person, we study things from anywhere of how the brain works, how it functions, how you remember, how you learn, what your emotions are like, how do you cope with things. So it's a study of multi-facets.
I was doing it for just the kids, mostly. So
sure. See, he was really trying to test me cognitively.
No.
Why Houston?
That's a really good question. I grew up in Missouri and lived in Pittsburgh, like I indicated. And really, coming out of my doctoral program, of course, you need to find a job to pay off all those wonderful school loans you've accumulated. There was a sports medicine program in Clear Lake at Christus St. John Hospital that recruited me out of my fellowship. And so I worked there for 3 years and developed their sports concussion program, and then worked for Methodist Hospital for a good bit developing their program, and now I am working, as indicated when we started the show, at UT Physicians and Memorial Hermann to broaden the program. And so I have a lot of experience developing programs and working in concussion management. And I thought Texas, Texas football, pretty vast place to do a lot of sport concussion management, and certainly love football, so it was a good place to be.
All right.
Well, so that makes sense because Houston is the largest city in Texas. So
I thought it was Austin.
No, Houston is the, like one of like number four or five in the nation as far as size.
Ooh.
Behind like what, Austin, LA and New
capital.
York. And
so
it's all right though.
That's okay.
All right, Oda, you get the
Describe your typical weekly schedule.
I think part of what I enjoy but can be a little stressful at times is that there's no structure to my schedule. During football season, I can work 12 and 14-hour shifts, much like our athletic trainers in the room who work pretty long days and the weekends. And throughout other periods of the year, I will see lots of soccer players, so soccer season's particularly busy. I do a lot of clinical work, but in times like the summer where I may not be seeing as many patients, I'm really busy in developing educational programs for coaches and athletic trainers, parents, athletes, and also spend time working on research, and that's also a very important thing, I think, when you do this field of work, is to develop ways that we can better help athletes if they suffer a concussion or how they can cope with a concussion if it occurs. So do a lot of research, and that certainly fills up some time.
So do you have any off-season? Like, we, you know, obviously we're coming up on summer in 2 weeks, and so we're pretty much completely off over the summer. Do you have any sort of off-season?
I don't, especially for not that period of time. I mean, I'll take a week here and there, but even when I take a week, and even like this last weekend, I'm still corresponding with athletic trainers and working and clearing athletes and looking at information. So really no off time per se.
What is the worst part of your job?
I think the absolute worst part of my job is when I don't get to suggest to an athlete that they return back to play after a concussion, that we, you know, they have a big tournament coming up or they have an important championship game, and I have to kind of break the news. Maybe they've been in denial since before they came and seen me that they were going to come back and play the following day after an injury occurred, and to tell them, hey, we've got to rest your brain, you need to get better, you might possibly miss this very important event. That's hard news to deliver, and it's bothersome, and in particular when we have to retire an athlete from playing anything in the future, that's particularly devastating because as a former athlete myself, I know the importance of sports and what it means to me, and I know for many athletes they've put their whole time and invested a lot of energy and maybe even their future into playing sports, so that's a tough call.
How often does retiring an athlete, how many times have you had that experience?
I mean, certainly it occurs at every level of play, so anywhere from professional athletes I've worked with all the way down to kids that are six that we say maybe you shouldn't play football, and so it'll happen several times in a season. It's not as often as getting to clear people to go back to play, which is more exciting and happens more often than telling someone to retire. But it's probably most difficult at the professional level when they've played for so long and they have a lot of money maybe invested, or especially in our sports where they're not overpaid athletes like rodeo athletes or some of our soccer players and hockey players aren't paid, you know, that extremely well. You know, it's their survival too. It's their finances for their family. So it's tough.
So with that, is there any sort of, so say a kid has a soccer game this weekend, a big, you know, state tournament, but he gets a concussion on Monday and he has, you know, another game Tuesday, Wednesday. Is there any way to say, you know, you cannot play, you know, like legally? I mean, I don't know.
Well, Natasha's law was passed last summer. It was signed into law, and that helps us in terms of our UIL sports and in our high schools and junior highs to be able to, once a concussion is suspected, an athlete's removed from play immediately and cannot return back until they've seen a medical professional, a physician has to clear them, and then they have to go through a careful return to play process, which includes several days of activity and building up that activity to make sure they don't have symptoms while they're doing it. Now, in terms of club sports and in private schools, that law does not apply, even though many private schools have chosen to adopt those safeguards. So in some ways, club sports athletes that suffer concussion while playing club sport might go under the radar, and because there are no rules to govern that they have to be removed.
So I guess that rule would fall back on the parents on those club sports.
Right, and that's why
it's the responsibility of the parents.
Correct, and that's why it's really important as part of my job is to continue to educate parents and the athlete themselves, even that play in those sports, that, you know, even though there may not be a specific law, it's really important that you follow these things. They're made for a reason to protect you and your brain.
I'm sure you have many many things to answer to this, but you have to pick one, though. And what's the best part of your job?
I would say, as I indicated, the worst part is retiring athlete. The best part is to be being able to say, hey, you've done everything right. You've went through the rehab process of return to play after concussion. We're going to return you back now to the game. And to get those types of responses back from parents and athletes that, hey, you know, I scored the winning touchdown, or my team went to state now and I have a significant contribution in that. That's really gratifying for me to know that they're back playing safely and we did everything we were supposed to do. That's pretty exciting stuff.
Well, which sport sends the most athletes to your office?
Definitely football. Football is very busy, as I indicated before. And, you know, particularly the way that the sport is played, I mean, it carries a lot of risk of collision and therefore concussion. But I also want to point out that soccer is pretty high on the list as well. I think a lot of people believe that concussion only happens in sports like hockey and football, but we do see a lot of soccer players with concussion, and it's not because they've headed the soccer ball. It's also a misconception. There are some concussions that can concur from misheading the soccer ball, but generally it's going up for a header and two players colliding and hitting heads. That's a pretty prominent injury we see with concussion in soccer players. And then sometimes having a kicked ball at close range to the heads, and another second injury type in soccer. So, you know, I want people to understand that concussions don't only happen in football, but we do see other sports, and we see we see baseball and softball players too with concussion.
Is there any like sports that you haven't seen a concussion?
Croquet, maybe.
Golf.
Actually, we've seen golf. We've seen players. You know, maybe weren't paying attention, or you know, a mishap happens and a golf ball to head, or I've seen people fall out of golf carts before and have concussions. That's no fun. So yeah, absolutely. There can be some dangerous golf cart incidents. But yeah, I really have seen, you know, equestrian sports. I've seen concussions there. I think that goes under the radar a lot of times. I've seen snowboarders. We've seen water sports, all kinds of stuff. I have plenty of examples of just weird things that happen where people get concussions too.
Even like swimming, I mean, you're in the water, you wouldn't think, but people hit diving boards or
wow. Like against the wall when you turn.
Yeah, or flipping or whatever.
Crazy people.
Or just, you know, if you think about, too, a lot of misconceptions entail that someone has to be hit right in the head to have a concussion. And many times it may just be a whiplash-like effect where someone, you know, when you flip over in the water doing a water sport, still your brain is moving inside your skull with enough force with that type of a impact. So that's where the concussion can occur in that type of situation.
I'm going to throw this out there, kind of what you just said. How does a concussion occur? Maybe just like a 10-second answer, kind of. I'm sure you have a lot of knowledge, but just what is going on there?
Well, think about your brain like an egg yolk inside of an eggshell. So when you move it, it's going to move inside of that eggshell with enough force. And even if you have it helmeted and you put bubble tape around or bubble wrap all the way around the helmet, still all of those things that you're choosing to do to safeguard can't necessarily prevent a concussion. Your brain's still moving, and when that happens, your axons and things in your brain are shearing and tearing, and you have different chemical changes. But at the same time, your brain's deprived of blood flow. So that's why, if you're ever wondering, the athlete who ends up having worse symptoms when they go back on the field and they're running, it's because they're increasing their blood flow to their brain when they're doing that activity, and the brain can't handle that. It says, ouch, that's too much activity at once. With my concussed brain, I need to slow down.
So did y'all get that egg yolk? You understand that's the yellow part of the egg, right?
Yeah.
All right. Just making sure.
That's all the white stuff.
No.
That's only the outside when you cook it.
I'm kidding.
Or another analogy people have used is a rubber ball inside of a box, you know, but I like the eggshell ones myself.
I think it fits a little bit more with the fluid. And
yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
I really see myself supervising a program that's really big in the South, much like what I came from my fellowship in Pittsburgh. I see a lot of people coming throughout the southern region of the United States to visit our program because we have a comprehensive program that not only works with people acutely for concussions that are simple, but we also have other practitioners and professionals that can work with individuals who have long-term effects of concussion, and we have offer different rehab services. And hopefully I see myself as well as trying to be a forerunner in making athletes, you know, what makes the athlete less sensitive to a concussion if it occurs? Is there some resilience training? Is there training to help someone before an event ever happens that they cope with an injury better? So I see myself trying to help there, and maybe helping in schools where we teach educators how to best provide accommodations and things for athletes whenever they're concussed. You know, what does that mean? So I think that I'll still be in my role, but I'll expand it to several more opportunities, which is really exciting.
All right. I know you said teaching educators the accommodations. We had one athlete that she came to school every other day, and she's only allowed to take tests once a week or one test a week. Do you face much difficulty or obstacles? I know you said there's a Natasha's Law, and I'm sure that helps some, but how receptive are educators, administrators, teachers to your orders or your prescription? I don't know exactly what to call it.
It's certainly evolved over the years that I've been doing concussion management. When I first started, there was a lot of resistance to cognitive rest and what does that mean after an injury, like resting your brain and not playing video games or texting and things. So really telling people why this needs to occur. And the belief is resting your brain allows it to heal, and that's really the number one prescription that we have for concussion management. There's no pill or magic bullet here that's going to make the concussion go away. So by removing tests or by having people attend school maybe on a modified schedule, it helps them to be able to acquire that rest. So every time they prepare for a big test or have to think, in particular tests or classes like maybe algebra where you have to do multiple things, it can certainly make the concussion worse. So that is a true thing. If someone says algebra is making my head hurt worse, it's you know, you're doing a lot more activity there with the type of tasks that you're doing. So educating teachers why we do it, not everybody requires accommodations. So we tailor make the accommodations that they might need based on maybe their test scores or based on the type of symptoms that they're having. So not everyone needs accommodations. That's important for the teachers to understand as well. We don't need to give them to everybody, but certain people do require them.
All right.
So we'll see how many of you all say you have concussion symptoms with algebra today.
I used to tell my teacher that all the time, be like, Miss, this makes my head hurt. She'd be like, no, it doesn't, go sit down.
Well, now there might be justification.
Or they'd be like, you're not even doing anything.
See, then you can just say, here, listen to the podcast right here. Dr. Ott talked about it. See,
look at this.
But Jackson, apparently I learned something this year because I passed.
I actually did learn something this year.
Congratulations.
So all my head hurting was for something.
I know. It was for a good cause.
That meant your brain was growing.
So what about that? Is your brain actually growing?
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good question. We believe as neuropsychologists and neuroscientists that your brain isn't fully developed developmentally until you're 18. So then you can also use that to talk to your parents about, well, I can't do that because my brain's not fully developed. I don't think they'll buy that. But anyway, your frontal lobe, the part of your brain that sits, you know, here in the front and behind your forehead, is the area that controls your emotions, but also controls your ability to not, you know, like maybe tell your parents off, all of those things. Mm. That helps kind of keep you under control. But that part of your brain isn't actually developed much later until you are past your teenage years. So how that applies to concussion is, we believe that if your brain's not fully developed, you may, when you suffer a concussion when you're particularly young, it may be even more difficult for you to recover after a concussion happens if you're young, like say age 6 or 7, versus if you are 18 or 19. So, you know, the developing brain is an important thing in helping athletes with concussion.
And when you have a concussion, can it like change the way you act?
Absolutely. So we all know that teenagers are irritable anyways, right? Athletic trainers. So we know that. So then you put a concussion on top of it, and you have, you know, a real grizzly bear there. So, you know, I always ask parents whenever I see their son or daughter, I say, are you more irritable than normal as a teenager? And many of them will shake their head yes, because what a concussion does is it does affect your neurotransmitters and things that regulate your chemicals. So when your chemicals are imbalanced and things are going on, you're more prone to depression, anxiety, and irritability. But also, not only are the chemical changes happening in the brain that might produce those types of behaviors, but if you think about it, you're maybe like staying home from school now, you're maybe told not to go out hanging out with your friends, You're maybe expected to sit out of softball practice, not play, and that all those things are your identity. They're all the things that you enjoy and make you happy. So when you can't do those things, that, like any of us, then it can make you really depressed.
That answer your question?
Yeah, but another one came to mind.
Oh,
I like it.
Okay. After, like, can those effects actually, like, last for years? Like, the effects of, like, your mood changing and stuff like that?
For most athletes that have concussions, they go away once the other symptoms resolve, the more physical symptoms and the cognitive skills return back to normal. But there is a subset of athletes that have maybe suffered multiple concussions and maybe haven't been properly managed and have some long-term effects. And those athletes can certainly be vulnerable to some long-standing depression, anxiety issues if they're not properly managed and treated when they should have been.
Any more questions?
I didn't know that.
Sorry.
All right, so this is a typical Fernando question he loves to ask anybody that comes in, elders.
Have you ever been treated by another expert or athletic trainer?
So have you had any injury or even a concussion where you had to?
Well, I certainly don't want to jinx myself. I haven't had a concussion, at least that I'm aware of. but certainly, you know, treated by other professionals for, I have a lot of headaches. So I've, over the years, have developed migraines. And so it's been particularly helpful for me to see specialists that deal with headaches. So even though I haven't suffered a concussion, I'm very sympathetic and aware to how troubling and debilitating headaches can be and how it can take you out of doing your normal activities. So many people that have concussions also have migraines. So, I can certainly identify there, and that's how I've been treated by another expert. And certainly I always ask athletic trainers for advice on things if I would, you know, sprain my ankle or do something goofy playing my own weekend warrior sports, but that's where I've been.
On that real quick, did you have any sort of athletic trainer at your high school since you said you're one stoplight?
We did not. And I don't think I knew of any athletic trainers in our whole district, of course, comprised of lots of other 2A schools. But no, we didn't. Our coaches actually would serve in that capacity and tape up our ankles and things before games. And we would go to them first, and we'd have one doctor pretty much in the whole town that would see all of the athletes. So we didn't have that. Actually, my first interaction with athletic trainers came in my fellowship in Pittsburgh. I didn't even know what an athletic trainer was before then. I'm sorry to be naive, but just didn't have that exposure before. So now I've come to really appreciate how wonderful that is and how they really take care of y'all as athletes and in many ways identify things so that you can get the proper treatment and help that other people might be overlooking.
All right, so in Pittsburgh, you said your fellowship, was that with the Steelers or what's the Pirates, the baseball team there, or was that with a college?
It was University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and they're the official health care providers for the Steelers and the Penguins. So that's how I got to really do a lot of training in that capacity.
So your first experience with athletic trainers was with professional sports?
Yeah, and then high schools at the same time.
And the high schools too. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just having trouble listening. I don't know.
Maybe you need to check your headphones.
No, they work. I think it's because I do, like, I'm trying to
maybe
do all this other.
Maybe you had a concussion.
He's trying to multitask. Yeah. So having a little difficulty.
I'm sure, I don't know if my wife is still listening, but I'm sure she would say, I'm not a multitasker. I can focus like crazy on one thing, but give me two or three things, and I'm like, let's cut those down. So multitasking is not one of my strong points. So I apologize for having concussion-like symptoms with memory for trying to multitask. All right.
Okay, Dr. Ott, I got a question here that Jeremy wrote up, so I'm going to adapt it a little from my things because I know we're going to have standards for the UILs coming out with a new one as far as the sideline tests for athletic trainers and everything, but can you ad-lib a little on it? Like, what would be a good test for parents or fellow people that are just saying that somebody hit their head and they want to check, you know, give them the little guidelines?
Yeah, the most common sideline evaluation that's being utilized now across, you know, really on the forefront in the professional arena with professional athletes is called the SCAT-2, and it's a checklist that has symptoms, it has a feature of balance, so we can test an athlete's balance with a suspected concussion. We also do things like ask them cognitive questions about, you know, what quarter are we in, what's today's date, to see if someone's oriented kind of with it. So it has those types of features. Now, sometimes doing that kind of comprehensive eval is difficult when you're the only athletic trainer with a really large group of athletes that you're overseeing. So many times you have to abbreviate that and just ask the simple questions to get at the core of what you might be or considering what's going on with the athlete. But for the parents and for maybe coaches who don't have the luxury of having an athletic trainer or physician on the sidelines, I would indicate that, and Bubba's still here, he created a little pocket fold card that's nice, and I give it a lot to parents and to coaches, athletic trainers, that they can slip in their pocket or in their tool belt, if you will, and it would ask those questions so that you don't have to remember them, because many times in the heat of the moment, you can't even remember the three words you gave an athlete to remember. So This is a good checklist for you to be able to do and kind of run down and make sure you covered at least all the important areas that you want to assess when an athlete's had a concussion. So I would advise that, we can provide access to that type of card for folks, and we've gotten feedback. It's really been helpful.
Okay, Bubba had mentioned something before with concussions, like the shaggy dog. What did you call it? The wagon, or the, like, you shake your head.
Yeah, shake your head.
Shake your head. Did you say something about a dog?
It's the dog test.
The dog test. Okay. So he said it's like when the dog's shaking the water off it and it shakes its head.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that one?
Well, I think one of the first signs that's an indication to you all when you're observing, or even you as student athletic trainers, are seeing someone come off the field after a blow to the head and they're shaking their head trying to get their bearing. That's kind of a first telltale sign there may have been a concussion that occurred. You want to go follow up with that. But what Bubba's indicating is with movement, many times concussion symptoms can be provoked and they can come about. So what he's saying is it's a way to kind of have the athlete move their head quickly to see if they have any dizziness, fogginess, their head starts to hurt worse. Because again, that's movement. That's again that egg yolk inside of the eggshell moving and seeing what happens as a result of that.
All right, so maybe we can videotape Bubba doing it here and post it up there in the link. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll get it later.
A little before, just to show that I can actually function.
Yeah, we need to get a baseline on the shaggy dog.
All right. So the shaggy dog test is a good one for the concussion. And then balance. Balance is always a good one. What is kind of your standard for the balance test? Because, I've seen lots of people do different things where they close their eyes. Would you just have them stand on one foot, eyes open?
In my experience, a lot of people pass balance things on the sideline, and they, you ask them if they're fine, they say they're fine. So it may not be the most sensitive indicator. Some of the cognitive questions might be more sensitive to finding out if someone's really had a incident. But as far as balance goes, I agree with you. I've seen different versions of balance testing being done. I think on the sideline, as long as you are getting some form of balance testing, and the reason for the eyes closed is to see if someone becomes more symptomatic or has more difficulty keeping their balance with their eyes closed, because there's a vestibular component where, perhaps there's some problems within your inner ear that you're not able to keep your balance and know where you are in your environment. So closing your eyes sort of helps get at anything we might not otherwise see with your eyes open. So, but it's important to indicate that a lot of people have balance issues and maybe not the most steady balance to begin with. So like we do with cognitive skills, we'd want to get a baseline for those type of things to begin with too in an ideal situation.
All right, on that, I know I've gotten emails about products where it's almost like the Wii balance board, but much more scientific. Do you think those things are any better than like the impact test, or is it just another tool to use along with impact test?
I think balance testing is certainly another tool to add to your tool belt along with the cognitive assessment. In some of the professional teams that I work with, we have chosen to do baseline neurocognitive tests like impact, and then we've also done the Balance Master, or there's Biodex is another product, and the NeuroCalm, which is probably better for more rehab purposes after a concussion. But we utilize those in conjunction with impact, because some people have normal cognitive function after a concussion and that's not been affected, but then their balance is. So it's, again, the two things together make a better assessment, maybe better at detecting what might be going on.
Do you have any of those, Biodex, NeuroCalm, any of those at your facility there?
We're actually in a process of exploring how we would utilize that. One of them, the Biodex, is portable, so it might be useful to or efficient to be able to kind of roll it out into the high schools and start baseline testing folks on balance before the season starts. So, that's certainly a possibility we're exploring to make sure it's an efficient thing that, can be utilized in your all's high schools.
That would be fun. I always like playing with new stuff, so I'll volunteer us to be a pilot or test group if
all
you
right.
want.
There you have it, Bubba.
So, of course, I don't know. You'd have to check with Bill. I think he does most of the paperwork, so he's going to be the one putting all the information in the computer. But, hey, we can figure it out.
He didn't say no. You're good.
Hmm. There you go. Yep. I didn't hear no.
I didn't say yes either.
You didn't say no, though. You didn't say no. We take the silence as a yes.
Still processing what he wants to do.
I'm still processing how to get all that stuff done. Trying to still get kids from doing impact tests.
Anything else on sideline tests? Any other questions?
Nah.
Close eyes, balance, shaggy dog.
Shaggy dog. I like
and
the
then,
shaggy dog, yeah.
Yeah, I think Bubba gave us those cards. I think I'm going to have to use those because I've done that before where I've asked a kid, you know, three words, and then I'm like, which one did I say first? Or, you know, like fire truck. Or, you know, you tell them to say a sentence.
It's really, it's not the order. It's just remembering the,
right.
the words.
That's why I carry a 3x5 card.
Yeah, so that's, I think I need
yeah,
to make
pull
sure.
Out that big card. Okay, I do this. Okay, now if I do this, and then I do this.
Yeah, it's a good template to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to make sure I keep that in my, I can't keep it in my wallet because I don't keep my wallet with me in the games, but. Maybe
stick
in the
in back pocket.
Back pocket.
Or that fanny pack you wear.
See, we don't wear fanny packs. We upgraded. We have all the kids wear sling
yeah,
packs.
Yeah, we wear the kids wear everything. So.
There you go.
But hey, we can remake that our little yellow emergency card and put that on there. All right. What do you have as a like a top tip for a coach, a parent, even an athletic trainer or a student who might have a concussion? They you know they think they have a concussion or you know well my son got hit really hard in the head, so.
I think the best phrase, and maybe you've heard it before, but when in doubt, sit them out. So even if you suspect a concussion, but then you might also be considering, is it dehydration? Does the person have a sinus infection? I think it's important to treat it like concussion at first and rule out anything else and making sure that you get them properly assessed. Because, gosh, even though you may have thought you were really right and it was a different medical illness or some other problem causing the symptoms, and they go back in and play and have another injury, that would be really a scary thing. You certainly wouldn't want that to happen. So I would add that, especially during football season, I see a lot of patients where they come in with the question of, is it dehydration and or is it concussion? And being able to know to how to differentiate those things. Maybe I'll say that here real quickly. One of the ways that we know about dehydration, be able to tell them apart, is once a person gets back into a cooler environment and hydrated, if the symptoms are still there, then you want to suspect concussion. Usually those should start to diminish when someone's drinking lots of water and in a cooler environment. And then if they go back in, particularly into schoolwork, and start studying and the headache reappears with mental activity, that's also very concussion-like. So that's some ways to tell the two apart. But, you know, again, when in doubt, sit them out.
I don't think I knew that dehydration produces similar symptoms.
Well, if you think about confusion, headache. Foggy, dizziness, I mean, those are all very typical concussion symptoms, and even sinus infections. I don't know if any of you all have sinus headaches in the room, but you know, many times the concussion, when you move, like we talked about before, a shaggy dog, whatever that test is, you know, you have symptoms reappear. Well, when you have a sinus infection, you move forward and you do certain things, you can really have the headache intensify. So they can be alike in many ways, and dizziness. So it's important to know the differences.
Very interesting. If you think it could possibly be dehydration, you get them inside, get them some fluids, and then see if their symptoms improve.
Yeah, I would definitely monitor them. And then one of the other things that we've done to make sure is to utilize the impact test, because we shouldn't have a lot of decrease with that type of phenomenon with dehydration, but we might expect decreases if there was a blow to the head and a concussion occurred. So we can use impact cognitive assessment to kind of see, too, what's going on.
Yeah, because with the hydration, they're going to get the headache. The dehydration, they're going to get a headache from that, because I've done it myself, so I know going outside working and then not drinking enough fluids, and then you get the headache, even though you're replenishing yourself, you still get the headache. But you're right, you don't have the fogginess and all the other stuff. They clear up once you get inside.
Correct.
All right, so the next thing I have is an article I was reading about concussion healing pills and powders. So obviously there's, you know, concussions are a huge thing, so everybody's got to try and get their, you know, their money out of it. And so some people are coming up with these pills or powders that are supposed to help reduce the recovery time. Thoughts?
Yeah, I guess my concern is that there'll be a false sense of security that if you take this pill after concussion occurs that you can get back to the field more quickly. I think that in the one that you have indicated up there, Neuro Impact, I've read a bit about their marketing and of that tool, and that's how they say it. And really, you know, we want athletes to go back to play safely, not more quickly. We certainly don't want people to have to suffer with concussion symptoms, so there's always exploration and research to see how we can get people over their concussion symptoms more quickly. But really, in many ways, the brain has to heal on its own. So there is that. I'd also add that NeuroImpact is not FDA approved. They've done some research studies, but I haven't seen those research studies very publishable in terms of being able to read them in terms of scientific literature, so I'd be apprehensive or skeptical. One of the things, too, that's came out is omega-3s and their protective component of concussion, and many of the NCAA teams were put on omega-3s like last season or the season before. And my colleague, actually, he works at Vanderbilt, and they didn't choose to participate in that study. And so they're going to probably utilize them as controls and to see with the number of concussions, were they reduced if somebody was taking omega-3s? Is that a kind of a neuroprotective thing? So that's interesting. But at this point, there is no medication that we know makes a concussion go away. Just kind of like an antibiotic with a virus might make the symptoms a little bit more tolerable, and you can get by and do things more readily throughout the day.
Yeah, one thing that I mean, I'm reading the article and I'm thinking, these things are not federally FDA approved, like you said. You know, they're supplements, so I can really throw some baby powder in a bottle and say this is concussion powder, you know, it might help, and stick a label on it and then sell it, because it doesn't have to be approved by anybody.
Right, and I'm not even sure what the ingredients are. When those developers have been approached about what goes into it, they don't seem to give a really comprehensive report about all the materials and
a proprietary
and,
blend.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they just well, there's some stuff in there.
And Ms. Sarah asks, what's exactly supposed to do to shorten the recovery? Like, what is it?
And that's the thing I'm unclear about, too, in reading it. I didn't really get what it would work on in terms of brain function or work on in terms of metabolic types of demands, which that means, like, blood flow changes. I wasn't even sure from what I read. I think I'm reading the same article that Mr. Jackson is, and I didn't understand what that would be.
And do you think it would, like, this is my question, but do you think it would treat the symptoms or the actual concussion itself?
I think at this point it probably would work more on minimizing the symptoms, maybe making them feel less apparent to the athlete. But again, we don't know anything that can help restore cell growth or axons that have been sheared. We don't have any of that technology yet to restore those things in the brain.
And don't people think that if it helps you, doesn't it actually make them actually think it helps them? I don't know how to rephrase that.
Well, I think I know what you're saying.
The placebo effect.
Yeah, there's a misconception that feeling better is recovered. So many of us even feel better the day or so after a surgery, you know, 2 days after a surgery. That doesn't mean that we're completely healed to go back to all activity. So I always caution athletes that just because you feel better and your headache's less intense the second day doesn't mean you're healed and you're ready to go back to play.
No, but that wasn't what I was asking. Okay. I didn't word it right.
So you're saying if they believe the medicine is making them better?
Yeah, if they believe that the thing helps them, that will it actually help them recover quickly?
Well, I think we have that type of effect with any medication on a lot of different other medical disorders. Someone might be taking it for a day, a medication, if they have another syndrome, and it may not have truly been effective yet. It hasn't reached what we call the window of really helping someone, but because you believe it should work, you start to feel better, and that's more of a psychological thing. So certainly that can help happen in concussion as well, is, you know, how well or what's your outlook, what's your positive reaction to something that you're trying after concussion. And I think that's something that's going to continue to be researched, is do people get better more quickly because they have a better outlook and they're more upbeat and maybe more positive about the recovery than other people who can't handle trauma or, you know, difficult types of things.
So we're kind of talking about the psychological improvements, you know, like you feel better because you're taking this medicine. Do you think that would in any way affect or skew an impact test? Or I mean, those things are tested over and over to prevent that kind of...
Well, I think with any type of test that you do, you definitely have to be motivated. So many folks that are depressed may not give the best effort. I mean, you've asked them if they give good effort and they'll say yes, but really... they may not even be aware that they're not giving their best effort or being on top of their game on that day. So impact, like any test, I mean, even anything you might do athletically has a degree of effort involved. So if someone's feeling better and they think they're perceiving that they're better, you know, they might perform better too on a test like impact.
So in short, don't take anything that's non-FDA approved to improve concussions. And when in doubt, sit them out and just give it some time. It's your brain. It's the most vital organ in your body.
Yeah, I think someone said to me recently, and I thought this was a good phrase, you have one hard drive.
Hmm. Yeah, no
and
rebooting.
And you don't want a virus.
Right.
All right, so at this point, I'm going to turn down the mics like we typically do and let the kids, they're going to take off and say bye to Dr. Ott, and then we're going to finish up with a couple more questions. So.
Bye.
Oh, bye.
All right, so now we are back to the interview. And Bubba is now joining us because the students left a blank seat for him, and he just can't stand sitting in the back too long.
And he can't stay quiet either.
I know you all too well.
All I wanted was a padded seat. I didn't need all the harassment.
No, I just wanted to say thanks, Bubba, for setting us up with Dr. Ott. I definitely have learned stuff. Mm-hmm. We're not done yet, but I just want to make sure I thank you before I forget. Yeah,
no problem. I'm glad I could help.
All right. There's all these things about the NFL. NFL players suing the NFL about concussions. And, you know, one of the interviews I watched is, you know, well, it's about quality of life, you know, and I just think that me suing the NFL is going to improve my quality of life. My thought is the NFL didn't know back in 1980 the effects of concussions and those kind of things. How are they going to protect you? And so how is a lawsuit even going to stand up saying, you know, we didn't have information then? What are your thoughts on those types of
actions? Yeah, your impression is pretty right on, I think, in many ways, because we have evolved so much as medical providers in our assessment tools that we have, also our clinical impressions about someone who suffered a concussion. So that has all evolved immensely. And even, like I indicated before, in 7 years, I've seen a dramatic increase in what we know and the research that's pertaining to concussion. So I think you're right. We didn't have a lot of knowledge back then, and we thought that we relied on athlete self-report, hence why we've developed Impact and other tools, because we did just ask a player, how do you feel and how many fingers am I holding up, and that, you know, really predicated return to play. And at this point, we know that that wasn't appropriate. You know, I think when you have a lawsuit, it probably makes you feel like you have some control maybe in the recovery process. Again, maybe trying to consider what it might be for someone who's going through something like that. But, you know, at this point, we want to get them care if we can for any long-term effects that they might be suffering. But at this point, we do know the risks. And even if we put them out there on the table, if you tell people at the combine, here are the risks, I'm pretty certain most athletes would still play because it's the game and they love the game and they do know the risks. And, you know, now that they know the risks, when a concussion happens, we just need to know, they need to understand what we need to do to help them, and it's not rushing them back into the game.
Yeah, because I think it was like 2-3 years ago when Ben Roethlisberger got his concussion and Hines Ward was saying, you know, I've lied to the athletic trainers. And mm-hmm. So, I mean, even 3 years ago, we knew a good bit about concussions, and I think I'm pretty sure they were doing impact tests at least 3 years ago.
Right, and actually originated with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The impact test was first utilized with that team.
Yeah, but if they don't say any symptoms and say, unless you don't see them changing their performance, you know, but those are adults, and if they choose to do that, then...
Right. Well, and I think I read an interesting article, too, in rebuttal to the lawsuit that I'd want to point out is, you know, concussions don't only happen in sports. They happen in our other warriors, like the military. Mm-hmm. And we have lots of longstanding issues with blast injuries and head injuries with military folks. And you know, they're not able to sue the military. And, you know, we provide the best care that we can. So I think that we also have to realize we have other athletes out there, too, that are suffering these same effects.
Yeah.
How many of those NFL players suing are broke?
Yeah, see, that's what I was wondering, too. You know, because... I can't remember the guy's name, but he was saying it's not about money, it's about quality of life. Well, I mean...
That plays into your quality of life.
Yeah, I mean, if you're broke, if you spend all your money on other stuff, so I don't know. Then I read another one about Ricky Williams said, I don't think concussions or head injuries have to do with concussions or something like that, or getting hit in the head. Or football doesn't correlate with concussions.
Well, many of the people that... I've been doing some other media things where people asked about... you know, obesity is a big problem with retired NFL players, the risk and increase of diabetes and other types of medical conditions. So it's not only concussion, there's lots of other things. So I think, you know, as providers, it's our opportunity and our obligation to, when an athlete's going to retire, to do some sort of resilience training and try to get them on proper programs, medical programs, and also say, you know, you may not be experiencing any effects of concussion at this time. You may not be manifesting those, but what we know about CTE and some of the other longstanding syndromes is they may not show symptoms until well after someone's retired. Almost, I think the mean age is like 7 to 10 years after retirement. So what to do to help them when those symptoms, if they do appear, occur. So I think that's where we need to spend our training efforts with retired athletes in the future, is helping to, again, resilience training and helping them cope psychologically and physically with anything they might have had as a result of all their years playing.
Yeah, not have them do lawsuits and, you know, sue the NFL for something that, no, let's get them, you know, like quality care.
Right. That's what I would advocate for.
I mean, I know that I'm with Junior Seau, which they're all talking about it being, you know, post whatever the...
concussion syndrome.
Concussion syndrome. You know, because they never, I don't think they had any documentation that he had concussions or anything. I don't know the...
Yeah, and he may, I mean, it would be gross, it would be really unlikely that he never suffered a concussion. I mean,
he was a linebacker.
Yeah, statistically, you know.
I mean, reported one.
Yeah, I mean, statistically, like, I believe some of the stats are like 50% of all football players will suffer at least one concussion while playing football in high school. And that's probably, again, not the real numbers, because many of them, maybe the athlete isn't aware or the symptoms are so short-lived that they're not reported. But I think, you know, he definitely had some concussions, just the nature of football, but... You know, suicidality, it happens, you know, not only as a result of what's been it's been associated with CTE, the chronic traumatic encephalopathy, but, you know, there are a lot of athletes that have that possibly have committed suicide due to emotional disturbances that have never had concussions. So suicidality might be higher, but I also read something the other day that's no higher than in the general population in terms of other things. So
yeah, I saw that. But they're just better known.
Yeah, well, the media, you know of course, reports all of those things.
Right, and sensationalized it. But he also had gone through a divorce. Supposedly his restaurant was failing. He had money issues. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely was depressed. So.
Right, we can't lump it into, you know, we can't lump it in, it's all concussion related. No, it's not.
Right, yeah.
You know.
Let's go back to this. I can say something that I can go to myself personally from playing football. I mean, I stopped playing football in the eighth grade, but during the eighth grade or seventh grade, I was knocked unconscious twice. I mean, I remember waking up and they're all standing over me, looking over me.
Like, dude.
You know, and chin strap broken, mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know how long I was out.
Right.
But I don't remember, did I sit out for a week?
No.
I think I woke up, got up, put a new chin strap on and started playing again.
And right. Since that was before computers, there's no way they had impact tests.
Dude, he was using an abacus. What are you talking about?
We didn't have calculators.
You might want to describe what an abacus is. There's folks out there that don't know. That's
slide
actually an
rule.
IQ question.
How about a slide rule?
Pocket protector.
Slide rule was before me. So. But, I mean, I do remember that, but I don't remember, like, what happened afterwards.
Yeah, my husband and I have had these discussions. He grew up in Ohio in a small town, like I told you all about my area that I was raised, and we both always have these discussions. Do you remember anyone in high school having a concussion? And we don't. We can't think of anyone that did, and I know they happened and occurred. We just didn't know what to call them, you know, just we didn't know what
they
to do.
They had a bell rung.
Yeah. Yeah.
They heard that telephone.
Right. But you know, I don't want to steal, it's her interview, but I think part of the beauty of the part of the beauty of the concussion law is it, and even before, is it took away grades of concussion. And if you go back to the old grading system of concussions, a 1, 2, and a 3, and everybody talks about a 3 being the worst, well, you get knocked unconscious, your wiring may go right back to normal. It's like tripping a breaker. You know, yeah. It's off, it's on, you're good. But some of these grade 2s for weeks afterwards are having these issues. And concussions are a lot like ACLs. It used to be a trick knee. Well, then we figured out it was an ACL tear. Well, then we figured out, well, we couldn't fix it. Now we can fix it. And so we're getting better at medicine. And that's my argument with coaches. If medicine evolves if football can evolve, medicine has to evolve. It's one back in my day. No, it's not that way anymore.
It's not back in your day. It's right now.
Yeah, thank God it's not back right. in your day. We give them water now. You know? Yeah. So
that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Junction boys. Yeah.
Do you have a cutoff point? Because you said you told six-year-olds, "Hey, you probably shouldn't play football anymore." You know, it like. Say this kid has two concussions this year. All right, you're done for the year. You're done with this sport, or you know, I would highly recommend you being done with this sport. Or, kind of, what's your standard there?
It's definitely an individual process and an individual assessment. I have professional athletes that have probably 11 documented concussions and are still playing. Not that that's anything to brag about, nor am I happy that. You know, to say, oh, yeah, they're still playing. But we have other athletes who've had one concussion maybe they've never gotten better from, and they've been retired from sports. So it's a really disparaging number. It's a lot of differences between folks. But what I look for as a clinician is a few things. One is, how long do the symptoms occur for? Most athletes with concussion, particularly in football, usually recover within 3 weeks of the concussion or back playing their sport. Is it protracted? Is the recovery process complicated by the fact that they need medications to help them cope, that they've been out of school a lot? So what's the quality of the recovery? And secondly, how many concussions have they had? And not necessarily because of the number, but what's the spacing in between them? So, I mean, in particular, it would be very concerning if there were multiple concussions in the same sports season, but I've had some athletes where it's like every year for the past 7 years, they've had a concussion at some point. Well, that's not a lot of spacing in between those concussions. And thirdly, does less biomechanical force cause concussion symptoms? So if we think about Troy Aikman in the later days of his career, you can watch on game film that, you know, the hits he was taking were not nearly the hits he used to take, and they were producing concussion symptoms and problems that were long-lasting. So those are really three characteristics that I use in recommending to families if an athlete should retire. But also, I look at things like pre-existing factors, things that we know complicate recovery processes, like learning disability, psychiatric illness, those kinds of features, migraine history. If you have those kind of characteristics, much like you might have risk factors for heart disease, we need to educate you about the injury a little bit better, and we need to tell you what to expect.
That was a whole lot more than I think I understood.
So it's on tape. Sorry. You can go back and listen to it later.
So basically, long-winded. Them to Dr. Ott or whoever your local concussion specialist is, and then let them use their expertise, because she's talked about like three areas with like three subpoints in each area. And so that was a lot to look at.
So as you can see, there's a lot to say about concussion management, so we do know a whole lot.
Right. But if you go back to, and she alluded to a little bit, if you go back to when we graded them, mm-hmm. remember it used to be, well, right. if you've had two grade threes, you're out for this period of time. If you get a grade two, you're out. And we know that's not the case, that everybody, now we know, everybody responds differently on a different time frame. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can't throw a blanket over this whole thing and say, yeah, we got it covered. It doesn't work that way. With impact and the other things, it's a much better tool to, you're better informed if the information you're getting put in front of you and to make a good decision on.
Well, it's because you got to understand your brain is the most complex,
right? You know, but remember,
part
it used to
of
be,
your body. You know, it's not a knee, it's not a ligament that's repaired,
right.
And just strengthen the muscle
right.
around it.
Give it some time to heal, you'll be good. Yeah, but remember, grade one, you can go back after 15 minutes if your symptoms, you know, left you. All those things that happen, and now we're like,
right, yeah, that's what I was just thinking. This is only my 8th year as a professional, and I have personally used. Like, I remember learning as a professional, you know. Check home if they in 15 minutes they seem
right.
they seem okay, send them back in.
You can go back in, and then if you had a grade two, if you had a grade two, well, you needed to sit out a week, and then if you had a grade
you could
three,
go even further back when there wasn't anything,
or there were about 15 of them, and you picked and choose what
someone
you like best.
Someone just dated
themselves. Yeah, it's like okay, which one do
I
need to use?
But we have to carbon date him. But you know,
back in the old day, I was the youngster, and they were other ones that were like me. So
yeah.
So, Dr. Ott, do you ever go on the sidelines? Have you ever been on the sidelines when something like this happened and done, like, sideline evaluations?
Yeah, when I first moved to Texas, to really get to understand what athletic trainers do and the nature of kind of how sideline evaluations work. I did work a number of football games with athletic trainers, and I was really lucky because athletic trainers did allow me to make some of those decisions. If I say maybe lucky, unlucky, I'm not sure, but some of them were really very difficult. So, you know, walking in your all shoes for a game is, you know, there's a lot to handle and a lot going on. And I recall in particular a quarterback that an athletic trainer and I did our assessment and very carefully and did fit that criteria of symptom resolution within 5 to 15 minutes. And we continue to serial exert the person on the sidelines, making sure they could do certain types of activities, and they passed them. So we went ahead and returned the athlete to play with no further incident. But you know what? I was worried the whole entire game and very uneasy about if I'd made the right decision because, you know, I see a lot of the negative things with concussion management and the long-standing issues. So that's tough. And then I also work with the Texans and the Dynamo and also the Arrows in Houston. And I do go to a number of Arrows games where I've had to do pulled off the rink and done those kind of sideline evals where we've done the scat too, and looking and seeing how they perform, and professional athletes will minimize their symptoms. So it's tough.
So not just clinical experience, but you have on field
yeah
experience, you know, with the athletic trainer. So that's cool. It's good to see that, you know, you, like you said, walked in our shoes and you understand exactly what's going on with us. And so, you know, the shaggy dog
test. It's just the dog test. It's not a shaggy dog test.
Yeah, and that is, you mentioned the, you know, the coach that might be upset or the parent that's yelling over the fence at you for, you know, oh, he's fine, you know, and the kid.
Why are you holding,
you know,
my son out?
Yeah, the kid running down the field, you know, and you're trying to chase him, getting their helmet away from him. I've been, you know, some part of those things too. So it's not just the burden of, you know, returning the athlete, but all the extraneous things that are going on as well. It can be really, you know, think about Witten and the Cowboys and him yelling at the physician on the sidelines. That was kind of a priceless moment in the sense of, you know, the brutality of what y'all might handle when a concussion happens.
Well, at least we're with adolescents. They're not quite as bad as professional athletes.
They're worse at times.
Yeah. And it's not the shaggy dog. It's the wet dog.
Oh, is that what you're calling it now? It's just the dog test. It's a dog test.
Yeah, I mean, I guess since Bob was the one that told me about it, we have to go with whatever his title
That's
is.
That's right. It's not. It doesn't have a copyright
well,
or a trademark.
Somebody's going to say, what do you want me to do?
Videos
sit
it.
Up and beg? I mean,
well, they do that too. Let me go back in so you know.
I guess until he videotapes it and puts it, you know, proof.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so you're just going to butcher it until then?
Yeah,
so, okay.
Yeah, we got to let him let his, you know, grow his hair out.
I got like four different cameras
keep
over here.
Keep butchering. So.
You could put a wig on him and let him.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
is there anything else you would like to share with our wonderful listeners, however many there are?
There's only one right now, and that's,
well,
that's my wife.
You're getting ready to put this on iTunes.
Well, congratulations, so Mrs. Jackson. I think you're soon to deliver. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and to do this. It's, you know, education is probably the most important thing, and I'd also talk to coaches and to parents. You know, we do try to educate coaches a lot and athletic trainers, and I think we got it at this point. We're getting it, but I think the missing link is probably the athlete themselves. And so I think a takeaway home point, or I don't think I said that correctly, but a takeaway point would be that athletes also undergo some education. And we do that now in the professional arena, but we don't do it in the high school and the middle school and younger groups as well as we should. And an athlete recently told me that he was able to know he had a concussion because he went to the Peyton Manning camp, and actually they talked about concussions there and what to look for. And I thought that was pretty neat that, you know, maybe some of our camps, we need to do a better job of making that part of the camp curriculum, is talking about concussions and what kids might expect.
Very interesting. Yeah, I know that we're or the state, I guess it's the state, is requiring the 2-hour concussion update. Is that national or is that state?
State.
It's for our state. Yeah, so, but most laws have some kind of education built into it.
So the coaches will be updated. And I know they do that injury, the PowerPoint where they have to click through all the slides and the
right.
kids all sign the thing.
Right.
Does that?
That's a state law.
And does that talk about concussions?
Yes, yeah, it does. I get them mixed up. It's either House Bill 82 or Senate Bill 7. One of the two.
82.
Is it 82? The 7's for the AED then. That's required that they have to go through. They have to talk about steroids, and they have to talk about concussion, and they have to talk about other injuries and stuff with that that they're required to view every year.
So have you ever seen that?
I haven't.
You haven't? Okay. I was just wondering what your opinion was on that and if it adequately addressed it, but since you haven't seen it.
And some of the best testimonies are other athletes themselves, you know, that someone respects, that, you know, they can talk about what it felt like from the kid's perspective and in their own language, more so than, you know, even us as providers and authority figures.
So do you have any resource, maybe like a YouTube video that has, you know, like you said, Troy Aikman talking about his concussions and the long-lasting effects or anything like that? Do you have anything to recommend that maybe we could start implementing in our
education? We are in the process of developing a video that will not only have the educational components of all the research and whatnot and addressing the bill requirements, but we're also going to have some athletes come and share their stories and how their recovery and what it felt like to have a concussion. So I think that would be useful. So that's in process.
It's in the works.
Yeah.
All right. Which I know you talked about your website is in the process, and it was, what, Christmas time when you joined Memorial Hermann?
No, actually, I've only been here 3 months.
3 months.
So, okay.
So even after that. So, what, February, I guess? Is it month?
Right.
So, about February. So, you know, everything's still, you said your office is still under construction somewhat, right? Still figuring out where everything is going to go.
Right. Well, we are primarily housed where PT is and the Ironman Institute at Sports Medicine there in the Memorial Hermann Plaza. So, we get direct linkage to all those folks and pretty high-paced environment. So it's fun.
So, you know, everything's still building. I know the website, I have it listed here. I'll list it on the show notes. It's ironman.memorialherman.org. And then she said, they're still working on that. That's one of the projects for the summer. They're going to be putting all the concussion resources on there. What if you have a question about a concussion? Is there somewhere you're going to look, or are you just going to call somebody?
Well, they can always call our main number, which is 713-704-9647, and that's my direct office, but it's also the number for the concussion program at Memorial Hermann and UT. But we certainly have outreach athletic trainers that are employed by our sports medicine group, like Bubba over here, that would be a great resource to getting or fielding any questions to me. And hopefully what will happen on that website will be the opportunity to, like, kind of ask the doc or ask the experts so that parents can feel like they can, you know, chime in and ask questions and maybe have a chat. That's our vision. So I think that would be really helpful for parents.
All right. So again, the website, you said hopefully y'all have something along the lines of like instant chat, like where you can chat on the computer or where you can call in and talk to somebody. Or
there'll be during football season, we'll have a hotline because that's usually, again, the most need for after hours inquiries. But and then the website will have the opportunity for more email correspondence and things with our staff.
All right. So very cool. So look for some great and exciting things coming with the Ironman Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Institute website.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
That is a mouthful.
It took me some cognition for several days to get that down.
Yeah, the shirts went, when they printed the shirts, it went from like $5 to $15 because they had to put all those extra words on there.
Maybe so. Like $25.
All right. Well, is there anything else, Bill? Got any more questions for the doctor?
No, not on the air, but.
Bubba, you got any other comments?
I'm good.
Dr. Hyde, anything else?
I'm fine as well. Thank you.
All right. So that'll bring us to our sponsors, of course, Pasadena Education Foundation. They are the ones that pretty much gave us the stuff for this podcasting so we can talk to cool people like Dr. Ott and lots of other cool stuff. Memorial Hermann, or as I just said, the Ironman Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Institute has done great things. As I thanked Bubba earlier for hooking us up with, you know, Dr. Crumby last week, you can't plan those around those kind of things. So I'm sure he'll come on sometime, but Dr. Ott coming over here, Bubba's come over here twice, and I'm sure we'll get several other people through, you know, contacts with Bubba, and maybe sometime later on, Dr. Ott will be able to come back. But she's going to be talking about more at the Minute Maid Conference in a week.
Just under,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So next Monday and Tuesday.
I will see her again.
Yep, so we'll see her again. So that'll be cool. Like, hey, how you doing?
She'll actually know our faces.
Yourself.
So.
Yeah. So Memorial Hermann's done great things, they just streamlined the process, made it easy for us. So if you don't have a primary care provider for your team, I would suggest contacting somebody at Memorial Hermann and seeing what they can set up for you in your school. If you want to check, if you have questions about Dr. Ott, about her bio, about what to do in the case of a concussion, you can check out, it's ironman.memorialherman.org. And she said all that's coming later. So that's ironman.memorialherman.org for more information about her practice. Do you have anything right now that somebody could, if you know, somebody wants to look up information on concussion, where they could go right now?
I would say sportsconcussions.org is a good resource. It's just a kind of a website that's regulated by several different professionals. That's a good kind of resource. That's the one that comes off the top of my head.
All right, so for now, until after the summer or until they get it all jacked up.
CDC.
Yeah, I would use Center for Disease Control also has some good toolkits for concussion management. And the other one I think has a plethora of information is the IMPACT website, and that has lots of research articles scientifically based, and it can hook you up with providers across the country that are concussion specialists and are properly trained in concussion management.
All right, so sportsconcussions.org or CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control.org, or the IMPACT website, is that impact.com?
It's impacttest.com.
Impacttest.com. So there's tons of information there if you want, or again, go to the ironman.memorialherman.org website and find the information there about how to contact Bubba or Dr. Odd about your concussion stuff, and then they can definitely direct you in the right direction there. Yeah, makes sense? Mm-hmm. Good. Did I miss anything there? We're all good? All right, Bill?
Okay, since we're talking about concussions, I'll throw a words of wisdom out to our athletes, if they, any of them, tend to listen to us. Know your symptoms to your brain, because your brain is the most vital organ of your body. So if you have any type of symptoms, headache, whatever, dizziness, any of the symptoms, or check with your school to make sure you know all your symptoms that could occur from concussions, and especially tell your parents to actually read the concussion acknowledgement form that's going out from UIL, not just to sign it, turn it back in. I wish UIL would have done something to where they sign it, had like two pages, so they can actually keep that one and not turn it back into the school, and then they don't have nothing to refer back to because it has symptoms and everything on it. I wish UIL would have.
See, we just need to print more of our business cards, because then we could put a link to our website and have that on there.
That's true. And then when in doubt, sit them out. And to the dads in the that are listening, the athlete dads, it's, you know, it is your son or your daughter there, you know, don't think of, you know, putting them in harm's way when you have any chance of thinking that they might have something wrong, like a concussion. And like the old saying is, when in doubt, send them out.
Yeah, it's no good having them remember a state championship if they can't remember it, period.
Like when they're 30 years old and they go, did we play for the state championship? Yeah.
I graduated high school.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to contact us, you can www.pasadenaisd.org/phs/athletic training. You can watch almost every Wednesday, except for we're going to do one tomorrow, which will be the wrap-up for the year, because, like I said, I'm going to be gone most of the year. You can watch that on ustream.tv, and then in the search part, type in sports medicine broadcast. So then you can listen live. It does have some commercials on there. You can join the chat at www.todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast. Skype is PHS Trainers if you want to try and Skype in, and then you could be live, because we've done Skype guests before.
And then you'll have to wait till end of August, 1st of September, before we put this back on. So you can follow us on Twitter at PHS Sports Med. Google Plus is PHS Athletic Training. Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. You could call and talk to us personally, 713-740-0310, extension 01312. And we got all these things. It sounds, Dr. Ott's over there looking, God, they got more than we got.
And then you can download the app. Again, easy way to listen to the podcast. And it's
Android.
Limited edition again.
Android app.
Yeah, it's only for Android, because the iPhone one costs like $200, whereas the Android one cost me $25. So, since I'm not making any money off of it, I'm not about to pay $200. So, if you want the Android app, you can download it from Google Play Store, Android Market. It's PHS Athletic Training. With that being said, we have one more episode tomorrow, if you're going to listen live. I'll probably post it next week. And then for Jeremy, Bill, Bubba, Dr. Ott, Sports Medicine Kids, that's a wrap.